right. Well, we just finished our Batman Forever live stream, which regrettably did have this strange interruption in the middle. Sorry to everybody who was watching, following along. We don't know what that was.
We can't let that define it. What matters is that we made it through. Michael and Us Nation made it through. The audience joined us on the second live stream, and we were able to watch the rest of Batman Forever. And thank God we did, because I was on pins and needles. I was on the edge of my seat trying to find out what would happen to Batman. What would happen to Robin? What would happen to Edward the Riddler Nygma? And we found out the answers to all of those questions together as a family, Michael and Us Nation.
Yeah, no, I did have a lot of fun. I enjoyed the movie more than I was expecting, I have to say. I mean, whether I'm able to offer a sort of like ideological reading of it like I am with some of the things we watch, I'm not sure.
I can. Can I do it?
Go for it, Will. Tell me, what was your take on the movie?
My favorite scene in the movie is after Ed Begley's character. Okay, there's a whole section of the movie. People who have seen it will know. Ed Begley Jr. confronts Edward Nygma, played by Jim Carrey, about this hideous invention that he's created, this invention that's going to brainwash the masses. No, not brainwash the masses. It's going to extract images and ideas and thoughts from their head, and it's going to collect them in a central database, okay? Not unlike what's happening right now at this very moment. Not unlike what tech companies are doing right now. Companies like Google, companies like Amazon, they're doing this. Edward Nygma just took it a step further by actually having the thing connected to your literal brain and not to your search history. Anyway, that's what's happening, but Wayne Enterprises is a much more ethical company than that. You know, they don't want to do stuff like that. So Ed Begley Jr. is going to report him to the authorities, but Jim Carrey, Edward Nygma, kills him, and he does a deep fake. He creates phony surveillance footage that makes it look like he's committed suicide. Okay. And when Bruce Wayne, billionaire Bruce Wayne, sees this footage, he says, make sure that Ed Begley Jr.'s family gets full benefits. And his secretary says to him, But suicide isn't covered in the contract. And he says, I know, full benefits. So Bruce Wayne, not only is he righteous on the streets of Gotham, you know, beating up muggers, killing bank robbers with comical bags that have dollar signs on them. He doesn't just do that. He's also good in the corporate world. And we were mentioning during the live stream that there's that amazing scene in Batman Begins, when we find out that the Batcave didn't just begin with Batman. Actually, Bruce Wayne's family, like his great-great-grandfather, used it to transport slaves to the northern states via the Underground Railroad. So this is who we're talking about with Batman. We're talking about, like he is not just one of the good billionaires. His family has been one of the good billionaires all throughout history. And Batman is just the latest incarnation of this centuries-long crusade of righteousness. And I think we can all agree that he is Elon Musk.
Elon Musk, who's in the business of thwarting, you know, all threats to, you know, democracy and civic health in our present day. I don't know. The parts I enjoyed the most about our live stream was, obviously interacting with people. People had some pretty good riffs, honestly. There's probably a number of listeners who could, in fact, most listeners could probably replace either of us as the host of the show. I enjoyed watching the movie and thinking about the political economy of Gotham. Like, you know, how does the city council work? You know, what's the ideological bent? And I think, you know, you were saying, like, you know, imagine Batman going to testify before the city council and having to sort of convince them, you know, that he gets to have his special lane for the Batmobile. He's got his big lights and everything, you know, got to make some bylaw adjustments for that. I don't think so. I think it's like I said on the stream, I think it's safe to say like Gotham City is run by developers. Probably why it's such a shit place, to be honest.
Well, I just want to point out that there's the scene early in the film when from his office on the top floor of Wayne Enterprises in downtown Gotham, Bruce Wayne goes through a gigantic tunnel, like a big slide, that transports him from his office to the Batcave. And the Batcave is located in like Long Island Gotham. It's located in like Connecticut Gotham City. and think of the logistics of constructing this tunnel. Okay, he would have had to testify before or ask city council's permission. And okay, we get it. Council is corrupt. It's in the pocket of developers. That's fine. But how did he construct this thing without revealing his secret identity? How did he make it clear that this is something that he just had to do as the CEO of Wayne Enterprises?
Someone on the stream was pointing out that that's like very similar to an idea that Elon Musk has had, an idea, I say, like in you know, air quotes, like, you know, what if the future of transport was people shooting through like gigantic tubes with compressed air or something? And it's like, that's not innovation. I'm sorry. Like, I feel like it's the same with Bruce Wayne. You know, it's like he pretends he's an entrepreneur, but it's like, that's not innovation. Like, what the hell are you doing? It's like, you didn't invent tubes. You didn't invent tunnels. You know,
someone else pointed out in the stream, they wanted us to comment on the film's commentary on television. And I do think that this is a very important point, because this movie, Batman Forever, came out in 1995. We are in our favorite place on this podcast. We are in the end of history. And what are people concerned about in 1995? They're concerned about how TV is turning us into zombies. It's turning us into Beavis and or Butthead. We are becoming couch potatoes, sitting there just glassy-eyed watching Tim Allen on TV. And that is some of the anxiety that this movie is playing into. People are sitting there on their TVs, turning into couch potatoes. And as they're doing it, the box, Edward Nygma's invention, is stealing their brain and giving it to Edward Nygma. And these are still very relevant concerns, just not for TV. You know, TV is prestige now. These are now concerns that have been transported over to social media, to the internet. It's millennials and their goddamn cell phones. This is the new couch potato.
What would you say, like, what's your analysis of the villains in this movie? I mean, I found it kind of disorienting that the film sort of has, I mean, it's like sort of two main villains, but then like more if you count like Sugar, like she's aligned with the forces of evil. Like, what do you think is the sort of like ideological baggage of the Two-Face and the Riddler? Like, what do they represent?
Well, we know that the Riddler represents bad billionaires. You know, he's somebody who can't responsibly handle the power that he's been given. And
which is justly earned, by the way, because he is a scientist and he's creating stuff.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, he does pose a legitimate threat to Wayne Enterprises at one point. But it's people like Bruce Wayne that need to be in charge because they're the ones that actually can handle the power.
It's a choice between, like, do you want Warren Buffett in charge or do you want Theranos? Do you want Elon Musk or Elizabeth Holmes? Like, that is the ideological dichotomy in this movie. You know?
Well, also, don't forget, Bruce Wayne is making inventions that are beneficial to humanity. We don't see what any of those inventions are. We don't actually know what Wayne Enterprises does exactly. I imagine they're creating electric cars.
Bruce Wayne is waiting around for the congressional vote in 1999, where they repeal Glass-Steagall, the Graham-Hoff-Tartley Act or whatever. I can't remember. It's called something like that. Mm. When they repeal Glass-Steagall, he's just waiting for Bill Clinton to put the signature of the executive branch on the repeal of Glass-Steagall so that he can, you know, become intensely interwoven with the forthcoming subprime mortgage crisis. That's what Bruce Wayne is about. That's his entrepreneurship. That's his innovation, I think.
I don't quite have a political reading for Two-Face just yet. And I do want to see if we can come to one, because Two-Face used to be a respectable member of society. He used to be the district attorney. And he was a close friend of Bruce Wayne. He was closely aligned to the political class. He also used to be black, okay? In 1989 Batman, he was played by Billy Dee Williams. But then all of a sudden, he got hit by acid in the face, I guess turned white during that process. I don't know, became Tommy Lee Jones. Throughout Batman Forever, we see him doing a variety of shenanigans. He doesn't seem to have any overarching plan. He robs a bank, but he doesn't do it coolly or slickly. He literally drags a safe from the top floor of a skyscraper. I don't know why the bank vault is in a skyscraper, but it's there. He drags it and he carries it over Gotham City. He takes over the circus, which is the biggest social event in Gotham.
Yeah, right. The cultural epicenter of Gotham, the Cirque du Soleil performance.
That's right. He takes it over. He's broadcast on TV. And by the way, everybody knows his secret identity. They know he's Harvey Dent. That's on the news. And he's coming out. He's a real showman. He's like, by the way, everyone, I'm Two-Face. That's my brand. I'm Two-Face. I'm the bad guy. I take over things. He takes over Edward Nigma's big party. Okay. And he's got a huge lair. So I don't know. I don't know what he represents. Is he society's id in some way? Is he the return of the repressed?
I think my reading of Two-Face, I mean, it's a contemporary reading, not a 90s reading. I think he's a Q guy. What is in some ways like the backbone of Q? Like, from what I understand, QAnon like sort of thrives on, you know, like support from sort of like middle management types, you know, like people with authority that's like kind of locally constrained. Like he was a DA, you know, it's like maybe, you know, Gotham getting the DA, like if the New York DA became a QAnon guy, that'd be a big deal. But, you know, when I talked to Will Sommer a few weeks ago, we were talking about this small town mayor in Washington State, right? Who was like, it's like this huge QAnon guy. I think that's my reading of him, right? You know, he was like a source of kind of local authority. People respected him. They found out about the satanic pedophile cabal that's running everything. And he radicalized, you know, he became completely blackpilled and he became the Two-Face. I think that's my reading of the character.
Well, Edward Nigma is not a class trader because he becomes rich. He's a bootstraps guy.
No, he's like a lot of sort of like right-wing sort of reactionaries where he's like, you know, he didn't come from wealth. Whatever the inverse of like the fervor of apostasy is, like he's the fervor of joining. Like he's joined the ruling class. And so he believes that it's like idioms, like that much more. I think that's what he is.
I do want to take a moment to address the gender politics of the movie. I think the Nicole Kidman character is problematic.
I mean, they're bad. I mean, what, yeah. Like, what else needs to be said?
You know, she is a highly respected psychiatrist, a very brilliant woman. And yet the second Batman shows up, she's just got a rubber fetish. I don't know what her deal is, but she's been given all of the resources of police headquarters and she uses them to frivolously flash the bat signal, basically to proposition Batman. I do think that is bad. I think the film is a bit misogynistic.
Yeah, no disagreement there. I mean, I think that's all I have to say about it. I will just apologize one last time for this bizarre interruption we had halfway through the live stream. Thank you for everybody who toughed it through that. I'm very sorry to the people we lost, but the entire stream in two parts will be made available in the next 24 hours. We'll post it so people can watch it who weren't able to join. And thank you so much for everyone who did join. Thank you very much for the chat. It was fantastic to interact with some of you. We'll do this again, hopefully with a little more technical precision, but on balance, I'm happy we're able to execute it all. It was fantastic to meet some of you and watch Batman Forever. So cheers.
I apologize for nothing. I thought it was a great experience.
Now watch this, John.